To Danoff, Mike, Indiana is a very agricultural state, but if you live in the urban areas of Northwest Indiana, farming can be as foreign to you as Mars. But that could change under legislation to expand urban agriculture. There's also a plan to enhance economic opportunities on the lakefront in Gary. And why aren't teachers given priority to get the COVID vaccine in Indiana? We talked to one teacher who has issues with that. And could the Bears land Russell Wilson? We'll find out. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Indiana legislators have a few more weeks to settle the budget and pass other measures. Indiana State Representative Earl Harris Jr. has his own legislation to expand the economy, education, food access in urban areas such as East Chicago, the district he represents. Representative Harris joins us to talk about his latest efforts. Representative Harris, welcome to Off Mic.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak.
Great. Well, tell us a little bit about your latest legislation.
Yeah, I have two bills that have passed the House and are headed over to the Senate. One is House Bill 1090, which was really something the city of Gary reached out to me to ask me to help them with. And it opens up lakefront opportunities. There's some things in place that kind of limit which cities can actually do development on the lakefront and how they do it. So this will open it up for cities like Gary, and it'll affect other cities here in Northwest Indiana, give them the opportunity to do some development on the lakefront. You know, we know from seeing other lakefronts around the country, the huge asset it is and what it means in terms of economic development, jobs, et cetera.
Oh, right. The lakefront really has a lot of potential. And now with the casinos moving, it opens up that area quite a bit. How do you, is there any opportunity perhaps that some of that would filter towards East Chicago as well?
Yeah, the legislation is aimed at loosening up some things, as I said. So it'll allow some other cities like East Chicago, Hammond, and other cities to the east of us to do some development on the lakefront. You know, we have great lakefronts here in Northwest Indiana, and this will be an opportunity to expand what's there, bring in, you know, draw more people that actually live here as well as other people that don't live here, you know, in terms of some tourism opportunities, restaurants, other activities like that on the lakefront.
Yes, right. That's right. And what other legislation are you, you said you had a second piece of legislation.
Yeah, House Bill 1283, which has to do with urban agricultural zone. You know, when you look at my district here in Northwest Indiana, House District 2, it's East Chicago, Gary, Hammond, Griffith, not much farming and agriculture going on, but it doesn't mean that our young people shouldn't have the opportunity to learn about those type of careers and opportunities. You know, agriculture is more than just dig a hole, throw in a seed and water it. There's a lot of science involved. So it'll bring some educational opportunities. It'll also bring some economic development opportunities in terms of people being able to do farming in urban areas and then be able to sell to local restaurants. When you talk about vegetables and things like that, it'll also you know, we're still dealing with COVID and the effects of it, and we know that food pantries have been hit hard. There's a lot of opportunity for local growing, and then what's grown can go to food pantries. So it'll open up those opportunities as well.
That's right. That's right. Let me ask you this. What areas of East Chicago or areas have you identified that could lend itself to become an urban farm?
So what it's really looked at, you know, we have areas here where it's open pieces of land that are really unused. And so we know that that kind of leads to blight and other negative things. This will give an opportunity for tax breaks for the owners that allow those to be urban agricultural zones. And the cities and municipalities have the final say if they're going to allow all of or part of, so there's local control in place. But there's, you know, there's opportunity to bring some things and put some things in place where there's development that happens and young people opportunities that happen. And, you know, when you have agricultural and growing going on, that's a lot better than places where people may dump things on or just, you know, wild vegetation outgrowing.
You know, what's unique about, I grew up in East Chicago, and what's unique about that is that, East, you know, we live in a very agricultural state, But when you grow up in East Chicago, you don't see any of that. You're surrounded by industry and steel mills. So the farm is a very foreign thing for people in Northwest Indiana, at least in the industrial corridor. How ironic is it to open up some of those farms in the urban area?
Oh, exactly. I mean, there's billions of, you're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry here in Indiana, and we are not really able to tap into it that well here in Northwest Indiana. So this will allow some opportunity, as well as some giving back in terms of young people's education and also in terms of food going to food pantries.
Great. I got to ask you some other things about some legislation that's been going on in the State House, things that you may aren't necessarily directly involved in, but I'm sure you may well aware of. You know, there's been a lot of pushback. Obviously, we're going through COVID-19. Governor Eric Holcomb has definitely put it in some of his emergency measures. Some of your colleagues in the Indiana State House sort of want to limit what he can do in an emergency situation. What's your feelings on some of those measures? Obviously, there are three branches of government, but in a pandemic or a health crisis, people have to move fast. What has been your thought in all of that?
You know, it's been interesting is that those pushes of limiting him have come from his own party. Those have not really been driven by us as Democrats. Those have been more Republican driven. So not sure what's going on and what the reasons are behind that. I mean, you're correct. I mean, we have, you know, something that's been set up and been working in terms of a system. And anything that slows it down, especially, you know, we've lived through something that none of us in our lifetime have lived through in terms of the pandemic. We don't want things to change or be put in place that are going to slow down the process and prevent helping people. So it's just been interesting to see how the legislature has gone and how, again, that's been more of a Republican push to limit him than a Democrat push.
Let me ask you this. If like last spring when all this was breaking, March, April, and there were concerns about what Governor Holcomb was doing, could he have not or could have members of the Senate and House leadership call for a special session to deal with some of those matters?
Yeah, we did. As Democrats, we did request a special session. Again, that's a governor choice. That was something that he did not choose to do. So we would have liked to have seen that to address some of the things we're dealing with now, then. But again, that was Governor Holcomb's choice not to do that and wait until session started in January.
But overall, you feel he's pretty much handled the situation as best he can along with the Indiana State Department of Health?
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of good work done. I mean, you know, everyone can, what's the phrase, Monday morning quarterback? You know, everyone can look back and say, okay, maybe we could have done this different, that different. But I think overall it's been handled well. You know, when you talk about putting mask mandates in, and I know there's been a lot of people that have been unhappy about some of the business closing, but we also have to look at the safety. And if people follow what needs to be done, the sooner things would open up.
Right. What about in terms, and I know sometimes my social media platforms blow up anytime, especially, in fact, later on in the show, we're going to be speaking to a local public teacher, some of them who are very upset that they haven't been given priority in terms of vaccine access. What are you hearing about that? And do you support or do you have issues with the way the state has decided to only do COVID-19 vaccines through sort of an age group?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I will tell you that we as Democrats in the House, and we have requested that teachers receive vaccinations. I mean, teachers are, when you talk about vital and essential, I mean, the people that educate our children are vital and essential. So we would love to see them be prioritized. I mean, it's, you know, not everyone that we want to see, unfortunately, right now are prioritized. I will tell you, I received a phone call and had a conversation yesterday with a constituent. And her concern was she doesn't fit the age group yet because she's not 60, but she has pre-existing, and she told me about another family relative, and they don't fit that as well. And so, you know, it would be great if it were opened up to some people like her that, are, you know, when you talk about people having transplants and other things like that, unfortunately, everything is not the way we want it. And we continue to work to push to get things opened up even more to help more people.
great. I got to ask you one thing about one more piece of legislation that has I kind of saw through the this session already. And so you're sort of our conduit, so I hate to put you on the spot on this, but I always marvel or like are perplexed at some of the things that state lawmakers are doing. And I'm not going to really ask you, unless you want to give it your position on whether marijuana should be legalized, but they seem to spend a lot of time whether they should grow this hemp flower, because they say, well, you get all the benefits of marijuana, but it's not marijuana. State police are saying it's identical to marijuana. It's the same thing. So why not just legalize marijuana and cut to the chase? How is growing the hemp flower any different or more palatable to, let's say, your conservative members of the House than just legalizing marijuana and be done with it?
You know, that's something that has been in conversation for years. And, you know, Indiana is a more conservative state. I mean, we know that we're heavily Republican in terms of the House, the Senate, the governor is Republican. So when you look at things that are more progressive, as much as, you know, we push and work on things, the numbers go the way the numbers are. I mean, we all understand math. So we know that when you talk about moving in the direction of legalizing marijuana, we're probably going to be one of the last, if not the last, states to do that. You know, but things change as, you know, as different electeds either don't get elected or decide not to run again, and other people come in. You know, those type of numbers and those type of advances happen. So I'm pretty confident it's a matter of time. It's just a matter of how much time it'll take.
You think there's some benefit to actually legalizing it, even for, say, medical purposes? I mean, we're so close to Chicago, so you see the influences of approving
Well, when you talk about medical, I mean, definitely, we know that there are some huge medical benefits that will, you know, help a lot of people out. I mean, that's a conversation I've had with medical people that I'm, you know, related to or family friends or, you know, in the professional world for years are the medical benefits. So we know those exist. There are people that, you know, don't believe in anything at all in terms of legalization, not even going down that path. And you're right. We're here in Northwest Indiana. I mean, as I tell people, I can walk out of my front door and be in Illinois in 10 to 15 minutes. So we know that there's a lot of crossing over the state line for those of us that live on the edges like that and are doing, you know, people are purchasing anyway. So we are losing some of the economic development part of that as well.
How many more weeks are left for this current session?
We're at the halfway point. So this week, you know, we in the House were in Monday and Tuesday. The Senate also was a short week for them. So this is the turnaround week. When we come back next week, the bills that pass the House will flip over to the Senate, and the bills that pass the Senate will flip over to the House. So we'll start the process over again, and we'll get into another 6 to 7, you know, week process, and then we get into conference committee after that. So we still have a little ways to go.
You know, I got to ask you one question, because you kind of you mentioned it, and I hate to put you on the spot, but you said something like, well, people come and go, and some people decide to run not for reelection. I mean, have you ever thought about running for governor? I mean, it seems like you're getting a bigger name down there. You're doing a lot of great things. You represent a big urban core. I mean, your name and your dad's name, the legacy he provided for you, has that ever crossed your mind?
Well, I'm going to guess if you ask all 150 of us in the legislature, if not 100%, almost 100% of us will say it has crossed our mind. So has it crossed my mind? Yes. I've had people that have approached me about it. We'll see. I mean, I have to tell you, I greatly enjoy being in the legislature. I greatly enjoy representing House District 2 here in Northwest Indiana. You know, what's the phrase? You never say never. So, you know, I'm not making any immediate plans right now. But, you know, again, I would say if you ask all 150 of us, most of, if not all of us, will tell you that it's something that we're either have thought about or are thinking about.
Well, Indiana State Representative Earl Harris Jr. represents East Chicago. Representative Harris, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, a reporter with WBEZ in Chicago. In Chicago is where teachers and students are heading back to the classroom. Teachers are given priority to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Not true in Indiana. Teachers here must wait in line like everyone else, unless you're a healthcare worker or work in a nursing home or have a certain underlying condition. Indiana is doing its vaccine by age. Currently, those 60 and under are eligible to get the vaccine. So why not teachers? Here's what Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb had to say about that earlier this week.
I'm just like a teacher. I want them to get vaccinated, too. And the good news is they want to get vaccinated. And we'll see if, you know, they register in at the 69-70%. I'm grateful. And when the supply is there, I hope they turn out in droves to get vaccinated, because it'll get us there sooner.
Holcomb's words are a little comfort for teachers like Anita Cox. Anita is a teacher at Hammond and joins us by phone. Anita, welcome to Off Mic.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Well, Anita, tell us, why should teachers be given priority over others? Why is the age system inadequate in Indiana?
Well, I mean, we are going to be surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands, of kids per day, along with, you know, in larger schools, hundreds of staff members. That could put us at risk for getting COVID and spreading it throughout our community and to our families. I know teachers who are in session right now who have gotten COVID. I know educators who have been hospitalized and nearly died from COVID. So I think that's the reason why teachers need to be prioritized, to make sure that our school's safe, teachers are safe, and our communities are safe.
You know, the Indiana State Health Department, led by Christina Box, she has says that to get COVID, people are more susceptible. It's by sort of their age and their core morbidities. It isn't really what they do. Do you buy that?
No. Again, like I said, I know people, plenty of teachers, who have already gotten COVID, and yes, they have recovered. Unfortunately, in Hammond, at the beginning of when COVID first came out in March, April, we had a bus attendant, a person who worked in our transportation department, who worked on buses with children, who died from COVID early in the epidemic. So we have those vulnerable people in our school systems that need to get that vaccine. We have kids in our system who go home to vulnerable grandparents, family members, that they could expose COVID to. So it's not just, you know, the teachers. It's the whole community that could be affected.
What about the idea that even people who are signing up now to get the COVID-19 vaccine, there's still really just not enough to go around, or at least to get people vaccinated as fast as possible? Do you think that is playing in the state's decision to do this primarily through age?
Well, possibly. But I would think that there might be some kind of backup plan where we know where these vaccines are being given out, and we are given priority for at least the stuff that's left over. When people don't show up for their vaccine, the teachers would have an opportunity to get those leftover vaccines throughout the day, and we're informed about those things. We can't even get on those lists.
Yeah, we do know that Indiana is running a very strict campaign where some pharmacies get into a lot of trouble if they dole out those unused vaccine or any vaccines to a group not specifically under the age category. You know, there's been this ongoing sort of disconnect or rift between the governor's office, state legislators, and teachers. Why is that? And it looks like it's playing out in this whole COVID-19 vaccine issue.
Well, you know, I've been teaching for about 20 years now, and in the last 10 years, public education has been under attack. And I think the reason behind it is that legislators, and I'll say Republican legislators, want to privatize education. I think that is their goal, because they have continually cut our funding, allocated it to private schools. They have cut our collective bargaining. Our insurance premiums have gone up. The way that they control the schools when it comes to curriculum and testing. I mean, they spent like $133 million on testing in 2 years. So I think that they're really trying to kill public education they're cutting it through funding and trying to push people to private schools and then eventually make those for-profit schools.
Yeah, I get all that. But even if everything you're saying is true and works out like that, private teachers are not given priority to get the COVID-19, whether you're private or a public school teacher.
Right. Well, I don't think they care about teachers. I don't think they care about kids. I don't. I don't think they care about educating most children. I don't think they care about equity in education, or they would fund it equitably.
Well, then how does the Indiana State Teachers Association, how do they push their efforts to try to get teachers on a higher priority list? Who are sort of your advocates in the State House?
Well, I am not part of the Indiana State Teachers Association. I'm part of the American Federation of Teachers and the Hammond Teachers Federation. What do we do? We are going to have to start creating actions where we get the public on our side so that eventually we can get some of these legislators out of office that have been voting against public education and cutting the funding for public education. And that's probably going to be a long-term solution. I don't know that there's going to be much that we can do in the immediate future. Right now, teachers need to organize so that we can save public education and in our careers.
Well, let me ask you this. In Chicago, we do know that teachers there, really pushed. Chicago's mayor is Democrat, so I'm not sure if the issue is really Republican or Democrat. But there, they really put the pressure on the mayor that they would not be heading back to the classroom unless they are put on a priority list to get the shot. Why can't teachers in Indiana do the same, just simply refuse to go to the classroom?
I think we're just talking about Chicago. So you have a very central group of teachers, and Chicago teachers have been organizing for years to be the political machine that they are, to be effective and organize and get what they want and win what they need. It hasn't been that way in Indiana. We have two different organizations in Indiana that represent teachers, ISTA and the American Teachers Federation. So that's part of the problem. It is illegal to strike in Indiana, so we have not been able to use that action legally. Certainly we could break the law, breaking an unjust law. I teach about that all the time. But we just haven't organized well enough to do it. We've been pushing these legislators and it hasn't worked, so I think we're going to have to start organizing in a different way.
But there has to be some teachers that you talk to who, and we're not necessarily saying strike, but if you're worried to the point where you don't feel safe going to the classroom because you feel you could be more susceptible to getting COVID-19, perhaps just not going in. Strike or a work stoppage, whatever you want to call it, I'm sure you've got members who have thought about that they are worried to that point of perhaps not going back to work.
Sure. And I think in Hammond, we've done a very effective job in our local. The Hammond Teachers Federation was at the table, right when COVID hit, talking about, is it possible to even go back? And we pushed because we pushed not to go back because we understood that Hammond schools were not safe. We're older buildings. We don't have good ventilation. We are in an at-risk population. We had a high rate of COVID compared to the rest of Lake County. We have very crowded schools. And our superintendent and school board agreed. We have been virtual since March 13th, 2020. And we are scheduled to go back in April, but we are much closer to those original CDC guidelines of being under 5% positivity rate. I think we're just like 5.7 right now in Hammond. And we know now that only about half of the kids even want to come back to school this year. So social distancing will be possible, hopefully by April. The numbers will be under 5%. And so I think many teachers will feel safe. Teachers also in Hammond have been given the option that with a doctor's note, they do not have to return the classroom. They can stay virtual teachers. So we have in Hammond worked that out with our school board and superintendent. But other locals, I don't know if they've been as successful. I know East Chicago has been pushing very hard, and they are currently virtual.
And when you teach in a virtual setting, do you go to the classroom to do that, or do you do it from your home?
I do it from home. We are given the option in Hammond to work from school or work from home because some teachers just don't have the equipment or the internet access that they need. I know a lot of elementary teachers like to teach from their classroom because they have, you know, so many manipulatives and things that they need for their students in their classroom. So I teach from home, occasionally from school, but usually from home.
And what safeguards are in place? Let's say you do have to return to the classroom. To your knowledge, at least in Hammond, what are some of the safeguards that they've have implemented to try to keep people safe?
Well, I'm actually heading to a meeting next week to really talk about those safeguards. Right now, what I know is that we should be able to be socially distanced. We have plenty of masks and hand sanitizer. The students will be equipped with see-through dividers, like kind of a trifold divider that they'll put on their desk. Teachers will be equipped with like plexiglass blocks around their desk. I think that you know, kids will bring those dividers with them to lunch. So that's all I know really now. I'm not sure if we're getting air purifiers yet, and how they're going to, you know, control the movement of students. I know we're going to have like staggered entries for the students so that not all of the students are coming into the school at the same time. So that's all I know so far.
Anita, what do you teach at Hammond?
I teach social studies. Right now I'm teaching psychology and history.
Is that high school?
Yes.
And let me ask you this. I mean, usually they say little kids. I've had younger kids of my own who they could be sort of germ spreaders with their sneezing and washing their hands right. How difficult is it even to maintain cleanliness with high school students?
You know, well, I think most high school students are pretty aware of, you know, COVID and the dangers of it and not wanting to infect their families. So I'm hoping that they are logical enough to abide by all the protocols that we'll be pushing for. You know, that's my hope. And if they don't, I'm hoping that there'll be disciplinary action where the kid's just going to have to go virtual. If students don't want to follow the rules, then they'll just be pushed back into a virtual setting.
It seems like you're in a school district that's very supportive, that they have their own concerns about teachers heading back before getting the vaccine. Is there any possibility that perhaps Hammond could push back on Indiana's plan to get teachers and students in there before teachers have had opportunity to get vaccinated?
What do you mean by push back?
Well, like not open in April, like all of Indiana wants to do.
Oh, well, no, I think we have the ability to say, no, we're not going to go back in April. If numbers go back up, if we don't feel that we can make schools safe for students and faculty, then we won't go back. But right now it looks like we are, you know, heading in the direction where it should be safe. But no, teachers will not go back if it's not safe.
Right now, those who are 60 and over can get the vaccine. I'm sure there are some teachers who fit that age group. But pretty soon, I guess it's going to get to 55 and 50. Do you know offhand a percentage of how many teachers that could benefit, say, just in the Hammond School District, if it got down to, say, 50 years old?
I don't know those numbers.
Okay. All right.
I'd be one of them, though.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Anita Cox is a teacher in Hammond, and she has concerns about going back to the classroom without getting that COVID-19 vaccine. Anita, thank you so much for joining us here today on Off Mic.
Thanks for listening to teachers.
Thank you. And we'll be back. We'll listen to another program called Hoosiers by Choice. It's a conversation done by Lakeshore Public Radio's own Chris Nolte. We'll be back with that.
The Indiana Destination Development Corporation, or IDDC for short, and the Lieutenant Governor's Office are telling us about the launch of a new quality of life initiative here in Indiana, which is called Hoosiers by Choice. Let's find out more about the program. We have with us not only Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, but we also have Elaine Beadle, who is the CEO of the IDDC. And ladies, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Oh, you're welcome. Well,
good to be with you, Chris.
Nice to hear you. Nice that you're joining us on the program once again. Elaine, if you will take a few minutes, explain what the thinking was behind the creation of Hoosiers by Choice and how the campaign is looking for people from Northwest Indiana to talk about it.
Absolutely. We're so pleased to be here to share with your listening audience today. The Hoosiers by Choice campaign is individuals who have moved to Indiana telling their story of why they came here and now why they love it. I know we've all run into people who have said, hey, I moved here from somewhere else. I really love this state. I'm going to stay here, et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to capture those stories and share them, not only with our Hoosiers to help them understand what people really love about our state, but also with those outside of our state who maybe have never been here before, and just to give them an idea of the quality of place. And we certainly have to say thank you to our partners in this endeavor, the Indiana Association of Realtors, who have become underwriters for this Hoosiers by Choice initiative.
Mm-hmm. How long is the initiative going to run?
We're going to do this for the entire year. And we have plenty of time to get all those other stories out there. We've got about 60 stories ready to go and videos that we'll put out two or three each week for the rest of the year. But we want more people. And so if you, Northwest Indiana, all of those individuals who are there and love living in Indiana, who have come from somewhere else, we welcome you to go to our website and upload your story, your 90-second video story that will help communicate to others what makes Indiana such a great place to live, work, and play. And that website is just HoosiersByChoice.com. And there you're going to find all of the videos that we've released so far, as well as an easy way to upload your video to tell your story.
Now, Lieutenant Governor Crouch, you and Elaine Beale have been working together on this project, I'm sure, for some time. When she first approached you with the idea, what did you think of it?
Well, I thought it was wonderful. You know, we anecdotally knew that people were moving into Indiana, particularly from Illinois. But then when Elaine came to me with this idea, we actually kind of delved into that a little more. And we knew that in, you know, studies that have been done, that over half of the state-to-state moves involving Indiana were inbound. So that meant more people were moving into our state than out of our state.
Mm-hmm.
And so if more people were moving into our state, why was that? And Elaine came up with the brilliant idea of letting those people, those Hoosiers, tell their story about why they chose to come to Indiana. And I'll tell you, the stories are just heartfelt. They're warm. And it really makes those of us who are Hoosiers by birth, it really makes us feel inspired and gives us pride, because I always say we're humble Hoosiers. We work hard. We put our nose to the grindstone. We do what's right. We don't expect pats on the back. But as a result, we don't always celebrate our successes, and we don't always appreciate how great our state is. And this is an opportunity to showcase that. And again, when Elaine came up with this brainstorm of an idea, you know, I said, this is perfect. But mm-hmm. That's what Elaine does. She's just got a brilliant mind.
Elaine, sure. Elaine, if you will you share a couple of the stories that people can check out for themselves if they like on the Hoosiers by Choice campaign website? Tell us about these people, the family members, perhaps it may be the case, what brought them to Indiana, and certainly what is making them want to stay here in the Hoosier State?
Well, there's a great story from a young lady in Wabash, Indiana, who moved here right out of college as a journalism major because she was looking around and found an opportunity to be with the local newspaper in Wabash.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got to Indiana, it was kind of like, okay, I'm going to give this a go. I'm going to see if I like it. And she found out she absolutely has fallen in love with Indiana. And I think part of it was how easy it was for her to get engaged with the community and to do things with the community. And so it's a great story that I hope everyone will go and watch that little video. But we have others from, example, one from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Jane moved to Lafayette, Indiana. And the reason she moved, she said, you know, I was an observer in Chicago. I'm able to be a participant in Lafayette. And she said, I'm a doer. So I love being in Lafayette, and I love my newfound life here, and I'm not leaving either. So all of these Hoosiers by Choice videos are just, as the Lieutenant Governor said, very inspiring and very heartwarming.
Now, tell us how the program is set up. You mentioned that the fact that you're looking for Hoosiers from all across the state to tell their stories and make sure they get onto the website. How is the state broken up so that if there are people here, say in Northwest Indiana, we're in the far northwest corner, how they will field participants in this program?
Well, we want someone from every county to participate, and we did divide the state up just north, central, and south. So if you go to the website and click on any of that, either of those three locations, you'll see the stories for people who are in those regions. But again, we are seeking those stories, and I know you know people, Chris, who have probably told you why they've moved to Indiana. And
oh, yeah.
You probably know several people who would have great stories to share.
Lieutenant Governor Crouch, I know that, of course, now because of the pandemic, you're not doing a lot of face-to-face talking with legislators at the State House. But if the opportunity presents itself, do you have an opportunity to talk with our lawmakers, maybe during the breaks in session, to get the idea from them and let them know more about this particular program to encourage their constituents to participate?
I think that is a wonderful idea, Chris, and we will reach out to each legislator individually and be sure that they have access to this and to the Hoosiers by Choice campaign and website. And we'll also encourage them to let their constituents share their stories also. I think that's a wonderful idea. We'll get right on that.
Now, Elaine, if you will tell us once again about the website, how people can participate, and how you'd like for them to tell their stories.
Absolutely. It's Hoosiers by Choice. .com. Pretty easy. HoosiersByChoice.com. You will see all of the videos that we so far released on that website, and there's a link to upload your own. So it's a very simple process. We ask for very little information about you, you know, who you are, where you're from, and then all you need to do is take on your phone or your iPad a video, a 90-second video telling your story, upload it, and we take it from there.
Elaine Beadle is the CEO of the Indiana Destination Development Corporation, and she is with Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch. They're both talking about the launch of a new quality of life initiative, which is called Hoosiers by Choice. It's a campaign that's underway through this year that features people who have moved to Indiana and talks about why they chose the Hoosier State to be their permanent home. Ladies, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, a reporter with WBEZ. Well, the bear season is over and folks are looking to next season kind of begrudgingly. Up until late this week, next season could be very exciting if the Bears could land a one Russell Wilson. That's right. Wilson said he would be open to a trade from the Seattle Seahawks to the Bears. Joining us to talk about this possibility is WBEZ sports reporter Cheryl Ray Stout. Hey, Cheryl, welcome back to Off Mic.
Thank you, Michael. How you doing?
Good. So was that come a surprise to you, too, a bombshell tweet by the handlers of Russell Wilson that he would be open to a trade to several teams, but including the Bears?
It was surprising that the Bears would be on that list, but the teams that he chose, the Cowboys, the Saints, the Raiders, and Bears, the one thing they have in common, they have offensive-minded coaches, and that's where he wants to go. He wants to go to a team that will provide him, one, protection, to allow him to throw the ball more.
But does he know that the Bears play outdoors and that's the only cold weather team he selected and there is no dome in Chicago?
Yeah. I mean, it's an issue. But also, you have to, you know, the thing is, he doesn't have a lot in his favor as far as where he could go, except he does have a no trade clause. So if they do try to make a trade, he could stop anything unless he gets the team he wants. So he does have that. But also, if they trade before June 1st, then the Seattle will be hit with a $39 million, you know, financial hit. So that will probably cause us not to happen. I'm sorry to tell you that, Michael.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it seems like they put this out there to get people excited, and if it doesn't happen. But, you know, if you look at all the teams he's thinking about that he would be traded to, the Bears actually make better sense than, say, the Cowboys. I think the Bears have more weapons ready now than the Cowboys.
As long as the Bears franchise tag Allen Robinson, that would be a yes. And their offensive line had improved quite a bit. So we don't know what that means as far as what the Bears could do. Also, they would have to give up quite a bit to get him. You would have to imagine it would have to be a really high-profile player. And I'm hearing players like Khalil Mack would be included in that. and at least one or two or maybe more high draft picks. Usually first rounders would be in a case like this.
Oh, so it's not nothing for free. You got to give something back to the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah. You would have to give out a lot. And he's 32 years old. He's been banged up quite a bit. Do you realize he was sacked 47 times last year?
Wow.
I mean, so he's worth it. I mean, he's worth having him as your quarterback. But you would have to give up quite a bit to get him.
His wife is also a celebrity, so you get the whole package if he comes to Chicago. We get some more star power in Chicago. You know, I don't know what players we would send, but we've had a lot of snow. Maybe we can send some snow to Seattle.
We do have plenty, don't we?
That's right. Well, we'll see how that plays out. It certainly seems like a tantalizing idea.
It makes Bears fans think positive about something because it hasn't been very positive lately, right?
So, Cheryl, let me ask you this. As of right now, who is the Bears quarterback?
Nick Foles.
Nick Foles, not Mitch Trubisky. Is he still on the team?
No. He's a free agent.
He's a free agent. Okay.
And more than likely won't be back. The thing with Nick Foles, when they traded for him, they also got his contract, $24 million. So he's on the contract for a while. But if the Bears do make any type of deal for a quarterback, let's say they try to trade with to get Sam Darnold or a couple other guys that are out there, Nick Foles would probably be in that package.
Wow. Okay, well, let's move on a little bit to the Chicago Bulls. Have been playing a little bit better as of late. They got one of their Bulls. Is it Zach LaVine who made it to the All-Star team?
Absolutely. Zach LaVine has been outstanding. He's averaging 29 points a game. They've won five of their last six games. They've actually having their best February in a long time. They're in the sixth place in the Eastern Conference. So right now, things are looking up. Now, the tough part is that when they come back from the All-Star break, they have a horrible, tough schedule where they'll be playing almost every other day. So it's going to be, they're going to have to really dig in and try to maintain what they're doing and improve even more. Billy Donovan's great with this team. He gives them the credit for what they're doing, but he says, we can be better. So he's not making them feel like everything is okay right now, that they can improve what they're doing, and I think he's right.
You think people should start paying attention to the Bulls? They're not as bad as years pass?
They are really good right now. They are in more games than they ever were, in the last 5 years. They may lose by a point. But they also, they're learning how to win. And that's something Billy Donovan had to do. When you had a team that's lost as much as they have, these players, that's a mental crutch that they had to, he had to push aside and have them realize, yes, you can win. And Zach LaVine is now learning how to be more than just a scorer. He knows how to facilitate the ball. He knows how to move. He knows how to be a leader. And he's played some defense. So he's becoming an all-around player. And with the veterans of Thad Young, who's really been a tremendous player for them this year, plus Thomas Satoransky, who's finally recovered from COVID, and Garrett Temple. They have these veterans mixing in with Kobe White, with Wendell Carter Jr., and so you're seeing a really nice product on the court. They're not the high echelon of teams right now,
sure,
but they're really good right at this moment.
And another team that's very good right now that was a little bit unexpected is the Chicago Blackhawks. They're doing pretty well. Are you surprised by their success so far?
I am surprised going into the season. If you told me, that they would be where they're at, I would be totally flabbergasted because you don't have Jonathan Tapes. We never know when he's coming back. You don't have Kirby Dach. You now lost Dylan Strome to a concussion. You don't have Corey Crawford in net. And there is where they're having their biggest success is in net. You have two young quarterbacks, goaltenders, in Kevin Lankinen, who's a rookie, and also Malcolm Subban, who had a shutout his last game. Those two players, plus the young infused players that they have, the rookies that they have, and Patrick Kane is being Patrick Kane. He's 32 years old, but he looks like he's 20 out there. So this is a good team. They know they can win a real tough game like they did the other night, 6-5 in overtime, and then they could have a shutout last night, 2-0. This is really a remarkable team. Now, and here's the other thing, Michael, is that they're playing the way that the league is playing. They stay in the city for two games when they're on the road, and so they're getting to make adjustments, and they're getting also a little bit of downtime where they get to rest. You don't have to get on the plane right away. So I think it's helping some of the older players.
Right, right. And Cheryl, let me ask you this. There was a lot, there's just the discussion about how the Chicago Police Department, they're getting ready to, I guess there's indication that, you know, festivals are going to be back to having people. It could be almost a regular summer in Chicago. Has there been any talk about allowing fans back into to see the Blackhawks and the Bulls play?
I don't think we'll see them at the United Center because right now, right today, they are setting up to do COVID vaccinations, and that's going to be starting in April. So that means that, you know, I can't see them having fans because they're using all the parking lots for the vaccinations because they're expecting to have 6,000 people being vaccinated a day. So I can't see where then all of a sudden you're starting to have fans there. So when I saw that information come out, I'm going, there's no way you're going to have fans in there when you're still doing the COVID vaccines.
Have any of the players mentioned anything about how it's still weird not to have fans, or yeah, would they be reluctant to sort of have fans start coming back in?
They really want the fans. Yeah. You know, when I talked to Kevin Lehkonen, who had his first shutout as a rookie, and I said, hey, what's it like to do that without fans? He goes, it's really weird, you know, because that's when you want to have the joy. Or they had a rookie, they had a hat trick. You know, you don't have the hats thrown on the ice.
Right.
You know, I mean, they miss it. And they at the beginning of the season, they missed that energy. Basketball, there's no home court advantage right now in the NBA. None. Mm-hmm. So that's why some of these teams are actually playing better.
What do you think about, you know, pretty soon we got March Madness and everything's going to happen in Indianapolis. Have you heard anything in terms of how that might play out, or, you know, are any Chicago teams might hit of that tournament?
It's going to be interesting because, you know, Indianapolis is going to be filled with the teams, and I don't know how it's all going to work out. I know that they're putting the finishing touches on it, but it's going to be, you're going to have to do COVID testing all the time. Unless these kids get vaccinated or what, I don't see how easy it's going to be to do the tournament. I really don't.
And any final thoughts about I reported this week that, of course, the owners of the Arlington International Raceway in Arlington Heights is being sold. So the future of horse racing at that facility, that almost century old facility, may be done. Have you ever went to go bet on some of the ponies over there?
I live just 5 minutes from there.
Oh, it's a beautiful facility.
It's a beautiful facility. Unfortunately, horse racing just isn't what it was. And Churchill Downs, you know, it's a vast property, as you know, Michael.
Right.
But what we're hearing is a lot of people are hoping, hey, maybe the Bears and maybe the state and maybe this and that having a new stadium there.
Right.
That almost happened in the 70s. George Halas almost thought about doing that, but it didn't happen.
And there was a push to get the Bears to Indiana.
exactly, because they used to train in Rensselaer. But the thing is that right now, I don't think any state budget could afford to build a facility. So you would need some outside money to come in there to do that.
That's right. Well, Cheryl Reistout is WBEZ sports contributor, and she always helps us out on Off Mic. So Cheryl, thank you so much for being a great guest again on Off Mic.
Thank you, Michael. Have a great day.
Thank you. And that is all the time we have for today's show. We had one segment that had to be dropped out. We had a last-minute issue with that, but we'll get you an interview about the guaranteed money-saving program, guaranteed income programming, Gary, perhaps next week. So for me, Michael Puente, and all my producers here at Lakeshore Public Radio, Dee Dotson, Jose Rodriguez, Tom Maloney, hope you stay safe and warm and have a great weekend. Thank you for listening.